There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my name is Jay. I'm the resident blogger on designfootball.com and the regular presenter of the designfootball.com podcast. What you're about to listen to is a Tottenham Hotspur special with guest Andrew Rockall from the Echoes of Glory podcast. This podcast episode was originally recorded around 2 years ago, but for various reasons has not seen the light of day until today. It covers the 2017-18 Nike kits, the first Nike kits for Tottenham, and also a summary of the Tottenham Hotspur kit history. We think it's still relevant, not least for my poor pronunciation of Tottenham Hotspur, and seems particularly relevant today to have a Tottenham Hotspur fan talking to a Liverpool fan as they're about to go head-to-head in the Champions League final. At time of publishing, we don't know who won, but it's interesting to see the evolution that has come about since Nike took over the kits, and particularly the influence they've had on their European kit, which we talk about. Also, keep listening after the music fades out, because I spoke to Andrew again just before last Christmas to discuss this season's kits. We also touched on where Nike should go now with the Tottenham Hotspur kit design, and I believe there have now been some leaks. Finally, there is a book referred to throughout this podcast. Please be aware that this is now available, so go out and get it if you haven't already. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to designfootball.com podcast. This is episode 27 and this is a Tottenham Hotspur special. I'm joined today by Andrew Rockall, also known as Stato. Hello, Andrew, how are you?
Good evening, Jay. Very well, thank you.
Okay, so we're speaking today because the new Nike Spurs kits have recently been released. What are your thoughts on those? Are you a fan of the new designs?
I do like them very much. I come to it in a way that I'm really glad that they haven't balls them up, if you know what I mean. There's so much they can do with them, and I'm just really happy that it's quite plain, very traditional. I think maybe that's where they chose to start off. But yeah, I really, really do like them.
Yeah. So we've talked about Vapor on this podcast before, and a lot of people have talked about it. From looking at those kits, it seems the perfect marriage of a club and manufacturer, especially where Nike are now. They look to me like almost definitive Spurs kits. The home kit just looks, the balance between the white and the navy to me is instantly recognisable as Spurs. Was that your sort of first impression of it?
Very much so, because you know, if they'd have gone with last season, Spurs had started with Nike, it very much could have been white shorts and navy socks to fit in with their whole introduction of the Vapor template. So I think it's just the perfect marriage at the moment, the way it's gone.
Yeah. So talk us through it. What have you got as the colours of the home shirt, shorts, and then socks?
The home shirt is plain white with a navy band around the back of the neck, which is sort of a navy with a white stripe in between it. It's got two navy flashes, one on either side, and the shorts are navy with a white flash, and the socks are plain white with the Nike tick and Spurs. embroidered just beneath it.
Okay.
But it's no gimmicks. It's just really, from afar, it looks like a Spurs kit. Close up, it looks like a Spurs kit. And that's all we can ask for.
So, explain to me, we'll jump into this straight away. Explain to me the situation with the shorts and the socks. What colour should Spurs shorts and socks be?
Spurs have this history of changing to all white in European games. So, traditionally, they have always worn navy shorts, with the exception of being two or three seasons. In the mid-80s, Hummel changed to all white, and Under Armour changed to all white in, I don't know, 2010, 2012, something like that. For me, it's the balance of the kit is wrong if it's all white. It works for European nights. It makes it special. But having the blue shorts, it's the embodiment of what Tottenham is. It's perceived that they copied the colours from Preston. Maybe we'll find out more about that, in the months to come. Uh-huh. But they've switched socks a few times. Traditionally, they've almost always worn navy. That was from the club's inception through to the late 60s. And then there was a period of, maybe 25 years where white socks were worn. And then in the years since then, they've probably had every third year they've worn navy socks, but mostly white.
Okay. So it is the safe, in terms of what the fans are looking for. And if we say fans are now going to have known the history for about a quarter of a century, maybe less,
yeah,
then it's kind of the safe option for Nike to go with white socks on their first release. Would that be fair?
Yes. Last season there were navy socks for the last year with Under Armour. That's my personal preference. I've always believed if it was good enough for the team that won the double in the 60s, then it's good enough for anyone.
Yep.
But they change it nominally, every other season or however it is. So they can change it back. That's the way kit manufacturing's gone. There's so many changes that they have to make change for change's sake sometime.
Yeah, so this is something that John Devlin's an example of someone who will rail against the changing of kits every season, and that is where you see these sorts of things being brought in, the change of shorts colours and socks colours and sock turnover colours, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Has to happen just to show that you've actually done something. The crest on the new kits, it looks familiar. Where do I know that crest from? Is that very much a
historic crest.
Right, okay.
Badge was redesigned in the middle 2000s sort of decade.
Yep.
I think that's actually a really good balance. It's very modern with a cockerel, but a very old-fashioned and traditional ball that it's standing on. This year they've returned to the shield to outline the crest, and it's believed to be for the one season only. That was in the spiel with when the kit came out. I've read certain things online about it being there to protect the cockerel whilst it's away from White Hart Lane. I'd like to hope that's not an official line, and that's from a blogger somewhere who's trying to meme it and, get notoriety from the back of that. But I believe it's going to be for one season only. But that would match what Tottenham wore in 61 when they won the double.
Yeah, so I might be wrong, but that looks similar to what the Pony shirts had in the mid-90s. Did they have that?
95 to 97, the shirt had a crest. It had a shield. And then they changed to a very, very traditional, old-fashioned style badge that really only been used on, club letterheads and the like, and then handbooks and the like. But it had been used before in the 90s and sort of revisited now.
Yeah. That elaborate crest, I've got a vision of David Ginola wearing that. Would that be right?
Yes, that would. Yeah, that would have been the year they won the Worthington Cup final in 99. A pony kit.
Okay. The away kit is... See, part of the away kit we've kind of already seen in the home kit. Is that right?
Well, the shorts are the same for the home and away kit. Like I said earlier, Spurs will wear all white in Europe. They're in the Champions League again this year. So the white shorts will be available. So I'm sure when needed, they'll be worn in a mix and match away. So there might be games away from home where navy, white navy is worn. But the away kit is listed and has been released as All Navy, which is, again, a very traditional Spurs colour historically, certainly through the 50s and 60s, until Navy was banned towards the end of the 60s and yellow was adopted as a change colour.
Yeah. Okay. And the embellishment to the away kit, are we saying the away kit is a direct reversal of the home kit, is it?
Exactly that, yes. The only thing that would change is the colour of the sponsor logo, which is red on the home shirt, and that reverts to white on the away shirt. But it's a very classy looking, plain and bold looking shirt, I think.
Yeah. The red on the home shirt, is that still a problem for people, or has it ever been a big problem for people, or is that just something that's been built up by the media?
It is for some fans who, in my opinion, are idiots. But it's fueled by the fact that the club did a range in the club shop of T-shirts and the like, you know, not official kit, but that was never red. And that was the slogan on the sort of T-shirts or hoodies. And then they went down the line of having sponsors with red logos. To my mind, it's just, you know, so the club have fueled it. The club have made it a thing, really. But then, you know, if they're choosing to take the money of a company whose corporate logo happens to be in red because they're willing to pay X million pounds more than the next competitor who's not, then, you know, so be it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Sponsorship, adorns shirts and has done for getting on for 40 years now. So if you like it or lump it, it's there.
Yeah.
So it can make or break a shirt, but...
Just to for anyone who, I can't imagine anyone doesn't realise the relevance of that, that there might be an idea that because it's the colour that Arsenal wear, and Arsenal being Spurs' main rivals, that might be a problem for a certain amount of fans that red appears on the Spurs shirt. But
it's never been an issue for me. It's not as if they don't have white on their shirt, do they? I mean, if you know the sleeves or collar and the like. So it's a crazy notion to me. To let it fuss you, but
what was just for me to know? What was the other red sponsor that they had? It was like a gambling company, was it, that Spurs had?
Well, Thompson would have been the first ones. The Holiday people. They were from 2002 to 2006, so they were the sort of UK based, but I think they were German owned sort of parent company, and then Mansion. Was an online gambling sponsor who had red, and now AIA, who are a Hong Kong-based life insurance company. So, you know, anything pretty much out in the Far East is going to have red as a corporate colour because that's such a lucky colour out there, certainly in all matters finance. So,
yeah. This is, we saw something similar with Cardiff City changing to red home kits. It's a similar philosophy behind that, I would have thought, in terms of the luck thing. Okay, so that's the two main kits, the home and away kits, which seem to be, we'll see to what degree they're interchangeable over the season, but
yeah.
You could have all kinds of different combinations there, I suppose, and that's something that people like to see. You've got dual purpose of the shorts and the socks. It's quite handy, I suppose, in terms of
It just works, doesn't it? You know, that you can change. That there'll be games where we have to go and wear the navy socks. Like last year, there were games where we had to change from navy socks to white. But if it can keep you in your home kit more often, for me, that's a good thing.
Yeah, if you're just changing a single element,
or
two elements even. Okay, so the third kit we haven't seen yet. We expect that to be released later, but that's more. The third kits of Nike teams now are more a Nike release than a club release. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Explain to me how that sort of works with Nike at the minute, and has worked for about 3 or 4 years now, is it?
Yes. I mean, there was a few years ago where the clubs that Nike had, the big clubs, they all seemed to get a fluorescent third kit. So you had Juventus in a sort of really lurid lime colour. Man City, I'm trying to remember which colour they had, but Barcelona had an orange one. And, you know, it was real lurid colours, but it was kind of a really obvious, choice of theirs. And this year's thing is it's going to have some sort of camouflage effect. Now, it's all going to be within the colour of the shirt. So you're not looking at having a green and a black and a cream like you would in a traditional, you know, camouflage fatigue, you know.
Yeah.
You know, garments. But, yeah, depending on which colour you're given, I believe Man City's is going to be a sort of dark green. And the Spurs one's going to be purple. Now, I wrongly assumed that it was going to be a sort of very lilac-y purple, which is a colour that Spurs have had in their palette before. But the latest releases, which appear to be not just a graphic, but look like a photograph of a shirt, it's a very dark purple. In no way is it a contrast from the navy away kit. Kits don't work like that anymore. We all know that. They're selected for a reason. But it seems to be paired with a sort of green trim, which is odd, if you ask me. But the badge will be in that, the sponsor will be in that, the Nike tick, and what trim there is. But there you are. There's not confirmed.
Okay, we have to put that caveat in, but that's an extreme example of a pointless third kit then, isn't it? Because what you're describing there, if you're watching this on TV, it could be the away kit, couldn't it?
Yes, yeah. There's absolutely no way you could have a game between, you know, two sides wearing the away and the third kit. It's just...
Yeah. That is something that Dennis Hurley will point out all the time. You would never need to have that.
So quite as long agree. As it no.
fulfills, yeah. yeah. So as long as it fulfills the criteria of being a separate change in the event that you need it, and sometimes a slightly different shade will solve that problem.
But that can work. I mean, I'm thinking of an example of Palace in the 80s, where they had their red and blue stripes, and then they had an all red chain shirt and an all blue chain shirt.
Yeah.
So if they're going to go and play Ipswich, they wear the red version. If they're going to play at Liverpool, they wear the blue version. That works on every level. Mm. Sunderland have done it in many years past where they've had a white away kit. The shirt's red and white stripes, but it's kind of more predominantly red than... But this is not, you know, this is not like that. It's not like it's one of two colours. It is two dark kits.
Yeah, I can't see an excuse for it as yet, but we wait to see. It might be that they pull it. I hope they pull it. If that is the case, then you'd hope that there is a last minute change, because it is basically give Spurs a different colour, isn't it? Because that's all it is. It's like we've got a range, we've got this style of shirt, we're giving it in various colours to various teams. So just give them a different colour from the list of colours we've got.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see on that.
The only time I can see the third kit definitely being needed to be used would be away at West Brom. This year, their home shirt is predominantly navy on the back, so the away kits and the third kit would be out of, use. So it depends how much white they've got on the front of their home shirt, whether Tottenham can wear the home shirts or not.
West Brom has been a problem in the past. There was the season where I can't remember what all the kits were, but there was. You had the third kit, and that's what you ended up wearing at West Brom. Was the
we had the grey and black.
Yeah, and that really didn't solve the problem. It was basically the three kits you had that season, which were Under Armour kits, really weren't fit for purpose either, mainly because of the West Brom game. But yeah, they didn't really have anything to deal with.
I agree 100%. It's a crazy notion, but that's the way it's gone. You would previously have had maybe home of white, away kit of yellow, and possibly third kit of sky blue, if not navy. But they now seem to sort of ditch those because they don't sell as well. Or it's perceived that they don't.
Yeah, I keep on hearing this idea that a yellow change kit doesn't sell very well. But like when Liverpool fans were always asking for a yellow change kit, the answer was coming back that it doesn't sell very well. But I don't know. I would always... expected to do quite well.
And when I grew up and first really started getting into football, almost every club's away kit was yellow. It just dominated. I mean, we look in the very late 70s and early 80s there, but you know, lots of clubs had yellow change kits.
Even, I mean, we're going to go through a little bit of the history in a second, but Spurs had kept a yellow away kit for four seasons, didn't they, in the 90s, which is basically unheard of.
Yes. Yeah, no, they... They had a sky blue third kit for for a couple of those years, but the yellow was retained 3 years as the away kit and 1 year as a third kit, and was used as well. That was the one with the ice effect, or the bird poo on the shoulder, as most other clubs fans.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. I'm just thinking of something now. For the first season, did it have the Umbro word mark in lowercase, and then subsequent seasons, did it go to uppercase?
You would need a book that told you that in such detail that I'm aware will be coming out in October time, but I couldn't say for now.
Okay, all right, that's interesting. I like that you're withholding this information. the marketing's going well for this book. Okay, so we look out for a book that might give us that information. That's good. Okay, so give us a little bit of a history, if contractually you're allowed to. If you give us a history of the Spurs kit, so what colours did Spurs wear originally?
Originally, they wore navy with what's believed to be a red badge. I mean, this is, you're looking 1883, so it's photographs are not always to be trusted.
Yeah,
certainly, you know, Arsenal had the problems with the wrong coloration of the photo, which led them to wear the red current shirt as a nod to a shirt which turned out to never have been the case. But yeah, those very early years, navy would have been the main colors. Changed in after 2 or 3 years into a sky blue and white half, so a Blackburn style kit. Then red for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Before the turn of the century, chocolate and gold for two or three years, which they revisited in the 2000s with a brown and gold strip, and then pretty much at the turn of the century, the 1900s, I should say, the 20th century. They changed to white shirts and navy shorts and stockings.
Okay, so that has been
consistent
variation.
Yeah, so that would have been from the time they moved to White Hart Lane, or White Hart Lane was built, and those colours would have been worn almost identically through till the late 60s, when they switched to white socks for a sort of cleaner look, I think.
So you mentioned the brown and gold kit was revisited. I remember this is a Puma kit, was it? What year we're talking? 2008, 2009, something like that? Is it?
A touch earlier than that memory. Yeah, just trying. 6-7, I think, was the third kit.
Okay, the brown and gold.
Sort of, yeah, they had a pale blue away kit. There was a sort of Man City would have had a one-off sort of year where they had a sort of laser blue. It was kind of more like that. I think it was, do you remember the Italy kit from the World Cup, where when it got wet, it looked entirely different? It looked like it was covered in grease. Well, it was that material. So I think once it got wet, or the players had sweated in it, it looked a different colour to, you know, when it had started of a game.
Okay. And the sky blue halves thing was revisited as well, wasn't it?
That was worn as the 125th anniversary kit, which was only worn one game. That would have been in 2007-08 season. And that was chosen for a home game against Aston Villa. You know, they wheeled out all the legends of the club and then proceeded to fall over and collapse in front of Aston Villa, and were 4-1 down before a meteoric comeback. And it was a sort of last-minute 4-4.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, they did that, and that was pale blue and white halves. But that was a sort of sold in a presentation box with, you know, wrapped in tissue and the like. But it was only worn the once.
Okay, interesting. I don't know if I've dreamt this, but I think the long sleeve version of that, the sleeves changed halfway down.
Yes, you're quite right. But not on the short sleeve, because it obviously didn't get the opportunity to. But yes, it looked more like a quartered kit.
Yeah,
on the long sleeve version, on the night I was at the game, I can't remember how many players wore long sleeve version. So probably Berbatov, that was kind of his shtick, was to wear a long sleeve shirt.
See, that's I'm just, because alternate sleeve base layers don't exist really, but you'd have to wear the alternate sleeved base layer the wrong way round, in effect, with a short sleeve shirt to get the effect of the long sleeve shirt.
Exactly. So you throw it back to front.
Or back to front, exactly. Yeah, if you wore it back to front, you'd be sorted. Okay, that is that's me indulging myself a little bit there. Okay, so if we go through the manufacturers that Spurs have had,
yes.
When does the manufacturer thing really become a thing? Are we talking the 60s? I imagine there's like Buchter and Umbro going yes. on without anyone knowing for about 50 years. Is that, would yeah, that be right?
The, if you had the shirt or you've seen match-worn shirts, then obviously you can see from the label. But if you're looking at the era when manufacturers' logos came onto shirts, then you'd be looking at Umbro shirt in the early 70s.
Okay.
And then prior to sort of the Admiral Revolution, where Tottenham returned to the First Division after 1 year hiatus in Division 2. And they had Admiral for 3 years prior to being, I think, the Coq Sportif's first English club in the sort of shiny kit era that began in the early 80s. Yeah. And they yeah. had some, for me, some of the best kits that Tottenham have had. They were certainly the era when I started following the club as a six-year-old yeah. and started, you know, being bought shirts as presents.
Is there a centenary shirt around then?
Yes, that would have been the first shirt with shadow stripes in England. I'm not sure where else in the world that had been done, but it was a thing of beauty, if you ask me.
Yeah, so that's the shadow stripes are done. Nowadays, it could be part of like the jacquard, or it could yes, be yeah. like a sublimation effect. But certainly back then, it was definitely part of the weave, like the jacquard effect, and it was quite a clever thing, and yeah,
and that carried on into the shorts as well. So it was, you're looking at two different navies in the shorts as well. So they were striped, but it was that subtle that you wouldn't say from afar that you could see that there was a stripe on them. But
okay,
and then the away kit changed to pale blue that season, and that worked really well. And there was a very rare and occasionally seen yellow. Kit in that centenary style, obviously just for the one season. Never worn in a league game, but worn in a couple of friendlies. And a game I was certainly at, which was the first testimonial for our greatest manager, Bill Nicholson. And it was worn in a Legends game beforehand, where the pale blues took on the yellows, as the differentiation was.
Okay.
It took years to find a picture of it. And John Devlin had been made aware of it. And I finally found a photo and sort of gleefully sent it to him, and it had been a bit of a holy grail, as you know, those oddities or rarities are.
So is that in the True Colours books, the yellow one, or not?
No, it's not in the book, because I think that's where it came to his attention, that a meetup with a former kit man at Tottenham had said, you know, you've missed one out of your book.
Okay.
With it never having been worn in a league game, I don't know whether it's one John would have illustrated, even if he had found evidence of it at the time.
I think he that's his get out a lot of the time, that if it hasn't yeah. been worn, then he doesn't need to illustrate it. Although I think there are some shirts in the book that he found out about and illustrated, despite the fact they never got worn. But I think he maybe did that before the event, so yes, he found out what the kits the team would be wearing next season were. But as it turned out, they never actually never actually turned out in it. Okay, so that's so the Admiral, then the Le Coq Sportif era, and then you have Hummel come in. What year did Hummel come in?
1985 they came in, and they did make a seismic change, and their first kit for the first 2 years was all white, even okay. in the league games, because obviously English clubs had been banned from Europe.
Yeah.
So that was quite a change. But navy chain shorts weren't available in the first season. The away kit was sky blue, and there was only two kits that year. So Spurs often, it was the era when short clashes were not allowed in the Football League. So Tottenham often wore white, sky blue and white away from home, which caused some problems at Manchester City. The referee stopped the game after 5 minutes. And it was definitely a Dennis Hurley overall clash of City yeah. being sky blue, white, sky blue. And he asked City to change, and City went off and changed into red and black shirts, black shorts, and kept the sky blue socks for one of the oddest looks ever. But that was during the game.
So From a Spurs fan's point of view, I don't know how many Spurs fans would have actually known this, but going back in history, a white and sky blue look is not necessarily that alien, historically speaking.
No, but in that setup, it would have been different. And yeah, historically, I'm sure there were people who did know the history of the club, but you know, since we've had, you know, wonderful sites like historical football kits, or the site that got me into my fascination and then just sheer love of football kits in the modern era, being Kit Classics, Andy Burton's website.
Yeah.
You know, then it became aware of things that clubs have worn historically, but I don't know if as many fans were aware before then.
No. Okay, so that kit, describe that shirt for us, because that was quite an important shirt, wasn't it?
It had chevrons across the chest, but it also had a diagonal pinstripe on the upper part of the chest, but not the sleeves, and then chevrons down the sleeves as well in Hummel's inimitable style. It was I think Denmark had an away kit in that white and red.
Yeah.
And a few Danish clubs certainly had it.
So what players would have worn that kit?
Very much Glenn Hoddle. It would have been his last two seasons at White Hart Lane would have been in that kit. Steve Perriman would have been at the end of his career. Clive Allen, his 49 goals in one season would have been 47 of them at least, or 48 of them at least would have been in that kit. And then They changed for the cup final. That was the second season of it, though.
Okay, they changed. Right, so then they wore the new kit. Did Diego Maradona wear that shirt as well?
He did, yes. He was going to be my next go-to. He played in Osvaldo Ardiles' testimonial, which was, astonishingly, to think about it now, 3 or 4 weeks before the start of the 86 World Cup, which obviously Maradona went on to completely own. But you imagine being the biggest player in your countries and you want to fly off and go and be part of a friend's testimonial. It just wouldn't happen nowadays.
I suppose, I mean, people would have known that he was, I think he was at that point still the biggest transfer fee. I think he had probably just gone to Napoli or something a year before, or a couple of years before or something. So he was a massive player at the time. I suppose with what transpired in the next few weeks, it was an even bigger deal to actually see him in the flesh at White Hart Lane than a lot of people would have imagined, I expect.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a high-profile game. It was Inter Milan with the opponents. Ardiles was a World Cup winner when Tottenham signed him. So, you know, we're looking at the player held in the highest regard across the world. A friendly and affable chap, it would appear.
Yeah.
Not very difficult to understand a word he says.
Okay, so you mentioned the FA Cup final. In the 1987 FA Cup final, Coventry won the game, but Spurs, something special happened to Spurs in that final in terms of kits, if we focus on the kits.
They did, yes. There was some error was made and half the team played the game with the sponsor's logo on the shirts and half played without. It was a fail of some epic proportions. And again, you'll find out soon if you buy a book, and the whole story will be unveiled there. But yes, Spurs wore the new strip in for the final. Coventry had to change shorts. The new strip that Spurs wore that day was later paired with navy shorts, but Spurs were agreed to wear the all white, and Coventry changed as they had against Leeds in their semi-final, from sky blue and white shirts, white shorts and sky blue socks, to wear navy shorts as an alternative.
Okay. So the navy shorts that Coventry wore in that final were actually a change shirt. Okay. Interesting. Half the team wearing the sponsor, half not wearing it. So that Hummel kit worn until 89, was it? Was that when it changed over?
For two more years afterwards. Halfway through, there was a change of logo from the sponsor. So there's a subtle change there.
Okay.
So yeah, that changed very slightly. And some players, it had the shirt a collar, and some players either tucked it in or had it removed entirely. So it looked like there were variations, but they were personal modifications, certainly.
Okay. Well, I suppose anything would go really once some players have worn the sponsor and some hadn't. I suppose you've got free rein to do whatever you'd like there.
Yeah, I mean, it made the news. I mean, it would appear that certainly no one in the team, because they say, you know, for a cup final, you wear tracksuits or anthem jackets. I'm sure they weren't called anthem jackets then. But nobody particularly noticed. And, you know, I'm sure it's apocryphal now, but Clive Allen claims to have said to Glenn Hoddle, "Glenn, where's your Holston?" And Hoddle said, "You know, let's wait till after the game for a pint, Clive, you know." I'm sure it's something that works on the after dinner circuit, whether or not it happened or not. Sorry to doubt you, Clive, but I don't necessarily believe that. But certainly it made, I think it was the front page of the Daily Mirror on the Monday afterwards. And then Carling Black Label, I think, used it for an advert. That, you know, there was a blank shirted player and that he drinks Carling Black Label was there.
I remember the slogan. Okay, so the next kit I remember particularly well, this is when I started getting interested in football, and I would generally see that as the Gascoigne FA Cup run kit.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't remember it being a fantastic kit, but it's iconic because of that FA Cup run. And was it against Oxford that he played particularly well? Was it that match?
He played well in every game. He dragged us to that final. He scored two against Oxford in a 4-2 win. I think Oxford were second tier then, not as low as they are at the moment. Away at Portsmouth, he scored both goals in what was otherwise quite a dire performance. We were at home to Notts County in, I think, the fifth round. It was televised. And we were playing terribly that season. We were having a really bad year. And he was carrying this injury, which required surgery. And he was only just fit for the semi-final, as it turned out. But, yeah, no, he carried us there pretty much on his own that season. But that was quite a nice, attractive kit. The shorts had a side panel, which looked nice. They weren't symmetrical, so you had a Hummel chevrons on one side and THFC embroidered down the other. But yeah, the shirt was classy and had chevrons on the sleeves.
Yeah, I seem to I might be getting two kits mixed up, but did it have like the initials or something overlapped on the neck?
On the neckline, yeah, it had a sort of monogram type, you know, yeah. In a tiny little chevron, I suppose you'd call that. It wasn't quite a V, but and a white collar, a white V with a blue band through that as well. So it was quite a striking kit.
Okay, so you say that Gascoigne, obviously, I didn't actually know he was carrying an injury through that whole season.
I think it was a groin injury from memory, he had surgery after one of the cup rounds, missed 3 or 4 weeks of football. Came back and played on a half an hour as a warm-up the week before the FA Cup semi-final. He was wearing, I think you wouldn't even call them cycling shorts, but more sort of neoprene swimming shorts. You know, like a wetsuit type.
Yeah, they had a white stripe down the side, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, you could see them under his shorts. And then he came back and had an absolutely astonishing game, because that was the season that Arsenal lost only once in the league. They lost one game in the League Cup. They were massive favourites. Tottenham were in big financial problems. They'd massively overspent for the second time when trying to build a new stand at the ground. And they were in great difficulty. And the rumours were rife that Gascoigne was going to have to be sold. And on the day we just blew Arsenal away. And it was down to Gazza and his fantastic free kick. And that took us to the cup final against Forest, where we rolled up with a brand new kit and a brand new manufacturer.
Yeah, so explain that. So there were actually shirts made. There were Hummel shirts made for that final, is that right?
Not before the game, no.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. This is interesting. Okay, so my understanding was, and I'm sure there is a book coming out that will disprove this, but my understanding was that the decision to wear, as it was, Umbro kits in the final, which was the following season's kit, was kind of a late decision, but Hummel had already prepared the FA Cup final shirts. But you're saying that's not actually correct?
That's not correct. And if you bear in mind that that Tottenham ran Hummel UK themselves, as you'll again you'll find out in a forthcoming publication. It was no secret that the contract was over, and once they had got to the final, that they would be wearing a new Umbro strip.
Ah, okay, all right. So this is a sort of basically an all round in house decision then.
Yeah.
That, to say, okay, well, this is going to be far more worthwhile to us in terms of marketing and profit and whatever else if we actually get them to wear the new kit in the final. Now, people will remember this kit, and it was people will remember the final. It was when Gascoigne actually
ruined himself,
lost his mind, essentially.
Tried to ruin Gary Parker and Gary Charles's day as well.
Yeah, he put his studs into Gary Parker's chest and was not sent off for that.
No, I mean, as a referee myself, it's one of those where you think, well, he played the ball, but his follow through was absolutely scandalous. And I think it was the referee on the day, Roger Milford, was a character in himself, one of those sort of showbiz type refs who was just as happy with everyone looking at him and, you know, his perma, you know, his sort of permed hair and the like. It just, his look was very much, he was a Clattenburg-esque sort of referee. Seemed to be all about him rather than the game. But I mean, on any given day, he could have been sent off, and it might have saved him. Might have been a very different life path if it hadn't have happened as the way it did. But
yeah. Now, there was something specific about the kit that Spurs wore that day that had people talking. What was
Yes, the long shorts, the return of the long short. You think the 80s, and in fact one of our opponents that day, Stuart Pearce, was probably the finest exponent of the short short, which I'm sure he rolled up to even exaggerate and show off his magnificent thighs. but yeah, the long baggy short was back.
And I mean, I've often argued that everyone would describe it as the Spurs shorts, but really there were several clubs that the following season were to wear these longer shorts. It was just because Spurs, in effect, wore their new kit a game early.
We debuted it.
And debuted it, and so they're forever known as the Spurs shorts. But they, just to extend this idea that they were long shorts, Chris Eubank, around that time, I think it's when he fought Michael Watson.
That's right. Actually
wore a version of those shorts, didn't he?
He did, and the reason for that was the fight was at White Hart Lane. Michael Watson was a massive Arsenal fan, and I think Eubank was encouraged to, I'm sure. He's no footballing allegiance, although he might pledge a support for Brighton these days as he's from that area. I suspect it was something done by his promoters, and he had an almost identical style navy short with a white semicircle, on the side of those.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. It's not something you often see. I think Michael Watson's wearing sort of Arsenal-esque shorts, but they certainly weren't.
White with red trim. Yeah, again. You know, I'm sure Ricky Hatton wore Man City colours or Man City badge on his shorts many times.
I was actually watching the Mayweather-Hatton, the highlights of the Mayweather-Hatton fight yesterday, and he was wearing sort of a very Manchester City style pair of shorts.
But that's okay, that game saw the return for navy socks, which hadn't been worn for, I don't know, 24, 25 years, certainly from the sort of late middle 60s, and not seen again till 91. And it was kind of used probably six or so years through the 90s.
Okay. So that's
I like the balance of that. It just changes it from being, you know, almost all white to being sort of half and half when you've got the navy shorts and socks.
Yeah, so there's a... So in a space of sort of 10 years, maybe less, you've seen them go in both directions in terms of an all-white kit and then back over to a white navy kit like that.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so Umbro for the next few years... any other highlights over that period? Obviously, people think of Klinsmann wearing the shirt. That would be the...
Yeah, well, the shirt he wore was the one where they'd started putting club badges within, and I wouldn't call it a this was a massive shield. Everyone had this really big, oversized shield for their club badge.
Yeah.
But, you know, the badge was still quite traditional and similar, but it was just housed within this enormous... Spurs didn't get one of Umbro's lace kits, which obviously lots of clubs had. But that was something we kind of missed the trick there. We had a third kit which had quite a sort of pretty effect where in sort of, it's hard to describe really, but it said Spurs across the top of the shirt and it was in sort of block letters, but they were then split like a barcode would look. So there were goalkeeper shirts that had this that said Umbro in it. I think Ajax had the same sort of design. So that was quite rare, but Spurs had that in a sky blue away kit. Was then.
Yeah. I think you've done a pretty good job of describing that. I can certainly picture it now. Those were sort of the highlights of that period. We mentioned the birdship shirt, as we call it. As I would call it.
Yeah.
I seem to remember Ronnie Rosenthal scoring a hat trick against Southampton in that.
Yes. Moment. Yeah. Super sub, okay. Rocky Ronnie.
Yeah. So then you moved on to Pony. Now the cliche here, or the what people tend to come out with about this is that the Pony kits were Pony. Is that something you'd agree with?
It was, because it was easy to say, because the quality was terrible on the support, right. You know, the replicas. Whether the players had the same problems or not, you didn't see it. But to me, it looked cheap and nasty. It had a massive oversized neckline that was sort of a big stitching that came down further than it needed to. It had really cheap, plasticky-looking buttons. And then the biggest issue for everyone who owned a replica version was that the navy collar, after a few washes, not even many, colour just faded out of it, and it looked like it was a ragged purple, let's say.
Yeah.
So it was just generally quite disappointing, and it was shirts were enormous even then. So even, you know, whatever size you bought, it was big and it was baggy and they kind of redeemed themselves with a plainer, more traditional Spurs shirt. In 97, and that stayed for 2 years, and Spurs won the League Cup in that shirt. Ginola, you'll remember him, well, maybe removing it to show off his vest.
Barnsley
after a mesmeric run and a fantastic goal.
Yeah,
it was a disappointing time for me for the home kit, certainly. The away kits were quite interesting. They introduced a purple and navy striped shirt, which I thought was really classy. You know, purple had been very lightly used, the Umbro away kit before, which people remember as the Klinsmann shirt, where he made his debut in, as that was the secondary colour on that one. But that was a mostly navy shirt, but that was nice. Yeah. And then there was a royal blue and sort of ecru, as everyone had to have an ecru, you know, colourway in their kit somewhere. Yeah. But yeah, there was quite poor kits, if I'm honest.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah.
Just sort of lacked imagination.
So you go from the ridiculous to the sublime then, in theory, with Adidas.
Yes.
That something that Spurs fans would have got excited about, getting on board with Adidas?
I think so, because Adidas was sexy. You know, it's very retro, and, you know, it's certainly a manufacturer we'd never had. We'd had our sponsors, Holston, for many, many years, sort of a dozen years from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, and then changed to coincide with the pony years, where Alan Sugar managed to sort of take a rival's money in the computer industry to advertise Hewlett-Packard. And Holston returned with the Adidas shirt, so it was kind of an all-German theme. But yeah, no, that first one certainly... I was a big fan of that. That stayed for 2 years. That had a nice flappy collar on it. And the next shirt wasn't so much. I wasn't a fan of it. I think it introduced a kind of a shade of sky on the shirt that looked grey. So that was part of the V-neck and the collar. I wasn't particularly a fan of that personally.
Okay. And there was actually a shirt that was made that wasn't retailed, which was worn in, would it been a Worthington Cup final?
That's correct, yeah. Spurs played Blackburn Rovers. Now, in the league that season, Spurs had worn sky blue at Blackburn, which the Football League were perfectly happy with. It was a bright sunny day, so that appeared to be no problem at all. Blackburn had a navy away kit, and they wore that at White Hart Lane that season. But this being a Football League competition, not the Premier League, they decreed that it wasn't enough of a contrast, and as Blackburn had been drawn the home team, Tottenham had to change.
And so this was a special kit was made for the final then?
Yes, just a one-off, never sold publicly. And it was a yellow shirt with navy sleeves worn with the home shorts and socks.
Okay. But it's not... doesn't really go down in Spurs folklore because you lost the game.
Yes, it becomes instantly forgettable, really.
Yeah.
Just on the grounds of the defeat.
So, Adidas, a short dalliance with Adidas, and then Kappa come in. Now, Kappa, I don't want to be... because there are a few events in that period that are notable, but essentially Kappa kits are... the same kit in lots of different colours over several seasons, aren't they? So you get to wear lots of different colours, but the kit remains more or less the same. That's reasonably fair, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, that first incarnation would have been 2002. That would have been the combat style. So you've gone from, it's a completely new thing as a fan. Where it's really stretchy and it's, however many percent lycra. But also the sizing was very different. A supporter, might suddenly be buying an 8XL shirt, and they really weren't, they came up two or three sizes smaller than you would expect.
Yeah.
But the first couple of kits were quite plain, quite traditional, not too much faffing about. The sort of reverse stitching, that became a thing in the early 2000s, didn't it, where, you'd see stitching that you wouldn't normally have seen. But that kind of replaced shirt trim.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of trim in those shirts. I remember two that I quite liked. I remember there was a navy one. I wouldn't be able to tell you which season it was, but there was quite... I think there was two navy ones. The later navy one was the one that I liked, I think, towards the...
Yeah, I think the first year we had a navy shirt with black sleeves.
Yeah.
And that was just... I don't know, it didn't quite fit as the Spurs shirt to me. The one I think you're thinking of would have come in about 2004. And that was, to me, that was like the perfect set of kits. And someone's mentioned that recently on a Facebook group that I think a lot of people who listen to this will be party to. And it was home shirt, was completely plain by the sponsor. Obviously, that was in red because it was Thompson.
Yeah.
But white shirts, blue shorts, white socks. The away shirt was the complete reverse of that, navy, white navy. And the third kit was all yellow.
Yeah.
And that was a good set of kits, 2004, 2005.
That was the other one I was going to mention, the yellow one, which was particularly classy. And there was a sky blue one either the season before that or season after, somewhere around then. That was nice as
also
well.
Also a lilac sort of third kit as well, which was, not
quite. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Purple maybe, but lilac was probably a stretch too much. But that Kappa kit, if I can just interject there, that first one was the last time a Spurs home kit was worn for two seasons. So ever since 2004, 2005, they've changed every single season.
Really? Okay. That's quite early for that, isn't it?
It is.
I know everyone's in line with that now, but that's, you probably were a pioneer in that,
yeah,
in that approach. Yeah. One of the kits that Kappa released, I didn't really think much of it at the time, and I remember it causing a big problem playing against Blackburn Rovers again. But yeah, there was a white shirt with navy sleeves. Is that right?
Yes, that was 2005, 2006. And for me, it got the balance of the kit wrong completely. If it had had white shorts, it might have worked because it wouldn't have been disturbing the balance so much. But it was a complete sea change. It just looked wrong. Well, I personally wasn't a fan of that. I know many, many fans weren't. But they had a royal blue away kit that year with yellow trim that was just so alien to Tottenham.
Yeah,
it was
right,
very Wimbledon style, kit. They'd never won in it, but they never scored a single league goal in it. I think the only goal they ever scored in it was in a pre-season friendly out in Asia. And the third kit got more use and certainly got more wins in it. And that was a yellow shirt with navy sleeves paired with white shorts, which obviously some people not fans of. I don't know why. I think it's just a scarcity thing. And I think people remember Edgar Davids in that shirt and his glasses.
Yeah. That's a good way of placing that one. Okay, so that was the Kappa period, which was pretty good because they do stylish kits. But as we mentioned, there were a few that were off the mark there. And then Puma, is that right?
It was, yeah. Straight to Puma.
Okay.
So we had 6 years with Puma. It's quite a long association.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought it was that long. I can think of a couple of shirts that stand out, but not necessarily for good reasons. There was one that had yellow flashes on white, wasn't there?
Yes, that had been the season they qualified for the Champions League for. Obviously, didn't wear it the following season, but yeah, that was again, it was very odd to have that much of a different colour in the shirt. Didn't like that. Wasn't a fan of that at all.
No. And so were there any sort of high points in the Puma years, home or away kit?
Well, they changed. They had an all-white kit again in 2007, 2008.
Okay.
That was quite a sort of change. And that year was the anniversary, so there was the sky blue and white halved kit as well. They were quite plain designs, really, for initially the first couple of years. There was that super shiny material that I mentioned earlier. So rather than the home shirt would have looked really plain on the front, but then on the back, it had a sort of U-shaped panel in navy, which you didn't see from the front. But and they had sort of, the socks were quite weird in that they were predominantly blue at the bottom, but then white at the top. And then the sort of alternate versions were blue at the top and white at the bottom. And it was pretty much half and half. It was hard to distinguish which was which.
Yeah. So we mentioned the away colours. So you had blue and white halves, you had the brown and gold. Anything else? Was there a purple Puma one as well?
Not purple. They sort of went through the whole palette there of all navy, all sky blue, all yellow. There was I think it would have been their very first ever all black kit, which was paired sort of with gold trim. That had the sort of fake collar. So from afar, it looked like it was a collar, but when you got up close, it was, you know, it was part of the shirt, even though it was the material of the collar, you know, those,
yeah,
not polyester, you know, it was different and it, you know, but for me, referees wear black, not football teams, but that's my issue. And
yeah.
I deal with it.
That again is
I don't deal with it. I rant about it. Sorry,
but this is that's another. It's a good landmark in the Tottenham kit history again because everyone has got to that point. And if that's that, if anything, is quite late for a team to first have a black change. I think
2008-09.
It's something that you're never going to be able to stave off forever. So you don't.
No, there've been a few since it kind of just gets thrown in every 4 or 5 years, I suppose.
So following Puma, it was Under Armour. And so how many seasons did you have Under Armour for?
I think it was 5 years from memory, till 2012 until the end of this season.
5 seasons of Under Armour?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, I would never have thought it was that long. Okay. That shocked me. I was actually literally in my head, I was thinking that it's either 2 or 3 seasons.
No.
To be 5 seasons is incredible. Yeah.
No, you'd be looking at a sort of Scott Parker wearing that in 2012. And again, that was another all-white home kit.
Oh, okay.
So Spurs had previously had a really nice plain Puma kit to bow out on. And Under Armour brought in this all-white kit, which had silver or grey sort of, you know, detail that if you're close up, you could see. But from afar, you just couldn't see it was there at all.
And they've tried a few things with the change kits, and they've put this big... on one of the home shirts, I don't know which season it was, there was a big bar across the top, which reminded me a little bit of the Admiral England 82 shirt, or is it known as England 82 shirt?
Well, yeah, that was a Puma shirt.
Oh, that's a Puma one, is it? Okay,
sorry. The Champions League season. We've qualified 2 years, okay. You know, since now. I don't have to call it the Champions League season.
But,
that was a really smart... It was also... Spurs fans thought it was a kind of nod to the 80 to 82 away kit,
yeah,
which had a kind of epaulette sort of look where it had navy on the shoulders. But that was a nice traditional kit. And for me, I see Gareth Bale rampaging down the wing in that at the San Siro, yeah, or at White Hart Lane, and Peter Crouch nodding them in at the back stick.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was Puma.
That one was Puma. Okay, what sort of thing of did Under Armour did? Sorry, what?
Well, their next
thing did Under
kit
Armour
for
do?
Me was a very traditional kit. It had navy shorts and socks. It was quite plain, but it had what was I'd describe as like a baseball style collar. So it had navy white navy sort of 3-band collar, but it kind of dropped down, you know, like a baseball shirt does, to quite a low point.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite stylish. A lot of the fans would have been happy because it had a sky blue sponsor that year, so it would have been without red.
Okay.
But again, you know, it would have been just one season. But Spurs had gone through a period from probably 2010 onwards where they had a cup sponsor. So there are different versions of the shirt.
So AIA started off as a cup sponsor, didn't it?
That's right. For one season, they would have been in about 2013-14. Where the year Hewlett-Packard sponsored that shirt. But for about 3 years prior to that, Investec had sponsored the cup shirts, whereas IT companies under the Hewlett-Packard banner had sponsored Spurs before that.
Okay. I seem to have a gap in my memory of maybe football over those 3 seasons. I'm not sure why. That's happened, but yeah, it's all coming back to me now. So Under Armour went on. Did people warm generally to Under Armour as a brand generally, in terms of the leisure wear and all that kind of stuff? Did that go down well with Spurs fans, really?
I think it did. I mean, they didn't do anything too dramatic with the kits, and obviously that's the be all and end all for football fans. You know, Liverpool had... their home kits were very traditional, but when they've had an American manufacturer, they've had some, you know, absolute shockers, or at least challenging, as John Devlin might say, kits. So they didn't really do anything that was too wacky or off the mark. The sash shirt was a nice one. I thought they did that quite well. That would have been 2015-16. Last year, again, there was a return to sort of the shoulders were in navy.
Right.
For the final one. But, yeah, no, they were generally quite tasteful kits. Away kits, they, you know, they didn't go too mad. Stuck to traditional colours. Lilac kind of got a look in there. And last season's was gold with navy pinstripes. I think that might have just looked classier if it had been yellow, but doesn't seem to sell.
Yeah, a little bit garish, that one. But there was also was there a navy one last season as well?
That was the official away kit, and it was only ever worn twice.
Oh,
worn at Stoke in a 4-0 victory, as we appear to always win 4-0 at Stoke these days, and away at Marseille. Sorry, Monaco in the Champions League. But the gold kit was worn routinely other than that.
Okay. So now the new era is Nike. We've discussed those kits. I noticed I was out earlier today and I noticed a lot of the sort of leisure wear and the training wear and
stuff
goes with it, and it's bound to be popular just because it carries the swoosh. So there's masses of marketing potential in that, and to be honest, some of the stuff I saw looked really nice. Sort of the classic like that chevron thing that Nike do in like hooded tops and things, so that looked great. Obviously, I've described this as the like a definitive looking Spurs kit, the new home kit. Where do they go from here, Nike? I mean, we don't know where they're going to go with Vapor. They've had it. This is the second season, and they've just tweaked it very slightly. Where do they go forward to create something new for Spurs?
You can only imagine it's going to be something quite seismic for all of their clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, I've bought my son a version of the shirt. He's only 5 years old, so it's a child's shirt, but. You know, you get close up, you can now see that there's polka dots or dots on the sleeve in a very light grey that from afar you just wouldn't know are there. But on the reverse of the sleeve,
oh really?
It's a very, very fine pinstripe. So it's not two pieces of material, it's one piece of material, the sleeve. And just the edge of the arm, it switches from being this dot to this stripe. But you just wouldn't know it depends on your eyesight, but 20 feet or so, you just wouldn't know it's there. But I've seen the Man City kit up close, and they've got the same thing with a very fine, sublimated or marking on the shirt.
I hadn't noticed that. I had a look at them, and I just assumed it was the same thing as the last season with just the very, very thin stripes. But if it's got that, if that effect is caused in a slightly different way, I suppose that's... I don't know whether that you could class that as a major change, but they're doing something. But
but at least it's not a seismic one like the England one where it's it looks pale blue because you've got the white and royal blue very fine pinstripe that changes the whole look. I mean, Inter Milan have got half and half. They've got one blue and one black sleeve on their away kit this year, haven't they?
Yeah, it's sort of a faint colour. That seems like it's going to fall foul of the same rules that the France shirt that had red on one sleeve and blue on the other sleeve, that fell foul of. We'll wait and see to see whether, certainly in the Champions League, whether that's allowed.
They won't be in the Champions League, no.
Europa League?
Possibly, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see. Maybe they've released that kit because they're in neither and they can get away with it. We'll wait and see on that. It's I suppose, a positive change for Spurs. It was something that you would have been apprehensive about, I would have thought, but as it's turned out, it's okay and onwards and upwards.
Exactly. You wait with bated breath for whatever they do next season, but I'm happy with the shirts. I think they're really smart. I happily bought my son it. I'm not really someone who wears shirts anymore from my youth.
Okay. Well, that's something for Nike to work on then. If they can get you back into a football shirt, then they'll be doing
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I'm a target demographic.
Yeah. Well, everyone is nowadays. Andrew, it's been brilliant talking to you. So thanks so much for coming on. You are a part of the Echoes of Glory podcast, is that correct?
Oh, yes, it's a weekly podcast for the fans, by the fans. That's our tagline.
Yeah, we should be clear that this is a Tottenham Hotspur podcast.
Yes, just Tottenham.
Okay, so tune into that. Is there any way we can get hold of you? How do we get hold of you and the podcast and so on? Is there a website address that we could get the podcast on?
The podcast, you probably best go through the Twitter account. Everything's advertised on there. We have got our own website. The podcasts are on all the usual places where you'd get them. But that's @_echoes of glory, all one word. And personally, I'm @stato_74.
Stato_74 to get hold of you. Well, that's brilliant. And thank you for coming on. For anyone who wants to visit the website, it is designfootball.com. There are lots of things going on there. There always are. We are designfootball.com on Facebook and designfootball on Twitter. And if you want to speak to me personally, it's J29ers on Twitter. But thanks again, Andrew. All the best for the new season. I like
Thank
it when
you.
A team has a good kit. I'm not a Spurs fan by any stretch of the imagination, but a team wearing a good kit, that I like success to follow. So I'll be hoping your results are reasonably good.
If I can just finish on a plug for the other thing that I have been small part of working in the background, is the forthcoming book, The Spurs Shirt, which is a photographic coffee table book charting the history and colours of the famous Tottenham Hotspur jersey, which will be out later in the year.
We have hinted at that. I don't know if people heard the little drops into the conversation of that book, but yeah, that sounds like it's a book. I own the Arsenal shirt book, and that sounds like it will be a very similar.
I also have a copy. It's a very fine book. The subject matter might not be particularly to my taste, but it's about football kits. So obviously, it's got my interest.
Well, there you go. If a Spurs fan will buy that book, then
I didn't buy it. I didn't say I bought it.
So, well, you wouldn't give them a penny. Okay. Then if a Spurs fan would have that in his possession,
yes,
then you can understand why fans of other clubs would get the Spurs. The Spurs shirt, is that what
the Spurs
it's
shirt,
called?
Yes.
The Spurs shirt. Okay. So when that is released later this year, then that should be probably just in time for Christmas. So people, all football fans and football kit fans, should be putting that on their Christmas list. Okay, well, thanks again, Andrew. All the best for the new season, and
thank you.
Speak to you soon, and we'll have a new guest on this podcast very soon as well. So thanks very much for listening. Bye bye. Hello again, Andrew. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Jay.
So we speak again now. It's been about a year, just over a year maybe, since we were talking. And we left it at the point where you said there was going to be a Spurs kit-related book being released very shortly.
That's
it
right.
Wasn't released. It doesn't really matter about the reasons why it wasn't released, but it is about to be. Is that right?
It is. It actually goes on sale on Saturday, the 1st of December. From the Tottenham Hotspur club shop and all of their retail outlets, and through the club website. But it's in conjunction with the club, official.
And what's it called?
The Spurs shirt.
Okay. Now, that may sound familiar to people, because there was an Arsenal, sorry to say that dirty word, but there was an Arsenal book called The Arsenal Shirt. Is that right?
That's correct. And it was the same man, Simon Shaky Shakeshaft, who brought all of it together in both instances.
Okay, excellent. And this was something that you were heavily involved with in terms of the research, would that be
in the background? Yes, very much so. Shaky is not a Tottenham Hotspur fan, he's a Hereford fan, but he is the oracle when it comes to match-worn football shirts. It couldn't have happened without him. And he's the glue that sort of, you know, held it all together. But he does have areas where, you know, he needed a little bit of assistance. And I was one of several people who helped out with that.
Okay, excellent. So when you're listening to this podcast, it may well be that has been released, but it's available for people to buy. Handy for this time of year, I guess. We talked about a lot of... So we left it, we were talking about the 2017-18 season kits. We talked a lot about the... Do those kits feature, and do the current kits feature
yes.
in the book?
Yes, we've managed to get everything that's up to date now. So it would end when Spurs go back to the new ground, hopefully, now.
Yeah. I mean, there's this podcast, there's the book, and there's the ground. So Spurs are doing delays. I'm associating myself with Spurs in a big way there, but if it is a podcast about Spurs, I think it is quite fitting that that we had such a delay on releasing this. Yeah,
yeah, it's all coming together neatly.
Yeah, you couldn't have planned it better. So we talked about the 2017-2018 kits. Now, just going back to that, we touched upon what seemed to be the third kit that was going to be released, which was like a purpley,
yes,
semi-camouflaged, but like angular camouflage thing. Now, we talked a lot about how it wasn't really much different from the away kit. How did, yes, that work in practice in the end? Was it a completely superfluous kit, or how did that work?
Yeah, there was a problem with, as we predicted, against West Bromwich Albion, where I believe Tottenham just wore their home shirt. And, you know, there was quite a lot of white on the West Brom shirt that season, and it did cause an issue. But the navy kit and the purple kit, there was no contrast between the two. You'd never play against each other in them, but you sometimes do need something for balance as an alternative. And if your two alternatives are the same, then there's always going to be a problem.
Okay, so to move forward, you gave us a bit of a prediction of what might happen, and you said it would have to be a kind of a seismic change from last season's kits, certainly with the home kit for this season. I guess that's basically what has happened, isn't it?
It is, very much so. The kits for this season they've got certain design elements to them that are not weird and wonderful, but they're certainly a big change for Tottenham historically. So you've got the gradient on the home shirt, where the bottom of the home shirt is completely navy, and then going up to about a third of the height, so just below the sponsor, it's going from navy to thinner sort of navy lines, and then white at the top half of the shirt. But it's certainly gradiented. But it looks very odd when worn with white shorts, which is something that Tottenham often do, and certainly wear in Europe.
Yeah. So this is a side whose default kit in European competition is all white, but they've decided to release a home shirt which has a gradient into navy at the bottom. Is this a massive oversight? Did they just, like, was it kind of a head in hands moment when they realised that once they'd designed the kit, do you think? Or did they just go, oh, it doesn't matter?
I honestly don't know, not being, you know, involved in that sort of process. I did wonder in the early stages whether it would lead to a European shirt, a special one-off shirt that would be, you know, more conducive to being worn with white shorts. Because even the socks, the top of the socks are navy and they go down to white at the bottom. So the effect is reversed. So the shorts bring it all together. That's the thing. So by swapping them out for white shorts, it just leaves you with a kind of band in the middle of navy. But, you know, that's what they've gone for, and that's what we have.
Yeah, is it a good kit, just even the domestic version as a kit? Does it look good? It strikes me as a little bit unflattering. It maybe looks like you've got your shorts pulled up very, very high.
Yeah.
What's the reaction been to it?
I think, personally, any kit nowadays, you know, it's got a 1 year lifespan. And I'm, you know, it's not good personally. I don't like it. I don't think it's very Tottenham. It gives us too much navy on the shirt. But it's only going to be 1 year. And that's the throwaway nature of modern football kit design, is that they've got to keep changing it. So they've got to keep coming up with new, sometimes weird and wonderful ideas.
Yeah. One observation I have about it is I kind of like the idea of Scotland wearing a white away shirt. I'm going off in a whole different direction, but I like the idea of Scotland wearing a white away shirt. And I was watching it. That's what they wore against Inter Milan as we're recording this. They beat Inter Milan last night at Wembley.
Yeah. Yes, I was there.
Oh, good. Enjoyable evening, I'm sure.
Very.
They wore that kit, and it made me think of like the Scotland 1986 kit. If Scotland had worn like a white away shirt with their home shorts, it sort of has that effect, even though the band is a little bit higher.
Yeah, and you've just got this floating sort of band, you know, when you're looking from afar, which is kind of out of place, as there's no sort of, you know, history of a thick Tottenham, you know, a hoop anywhere on the Tottenham shirt or a band across it.
Yeah, a strange one. Now, we're just going to go through the other kits, because the controversy doesn't end with the home kit. So the away kit, now this might be a myth, and it might be something that the sort of mainstream journalists are not into the kits have suggested, and everyone's sort of gone along with it, but is the Tottenham away kit Barcelona's training kit?
It does look almost identical. The thing is, because Nike tend to put out and I wouldn't call it a template, but it's certainly a design element on the sleeve of, it's very hard to describe. If you imagine looking at a graph that's produced when there's been an earthquake, you know, with a shaky line up and down, there's kind of that element onto it. So you've got a navy shirt with sky blue that's brighter in the middle, but it gets darker as it comes out into these, you know, shaky lines across the top of the shoulder and then down the arm. But then, Barcelona have a training kit in those exact colours with their badge on. That's the only difference, it appears. So, yes, it does. Maybe people say it's lazy or it is a Barcelona training kit. But, you know, Nike tend to do this. They tend to sort of put everything out to look the same, and you just have the colours different or the badge different for clubs.
Yeah, it's a striking example of it. Is it something that Spurs fans have kind of moaned about, or is it?
I think a lot of people bought into that. Oh, it's just that, you know, they're just using up old, and there's no way that but the Nike have made a load of stuff for Barcelona, and it's even the current stuff that they've got so much left over that they've just rebadged it with Tottenham. That's preposterous. Yeah. And if you believe that, then I'm sorry, you deserve to get angry at things like that if you're a bit stupid personally. But. You know, I don't think there's been directly a problem. I don't think it's going to prove to be one of the best ever away kits. I have no idea on the numbers sold. I'm sure they do still sell in spades. People will buy what the players wear.
Yeah. I quite like that. France had it. Obviously, it's become iconic because France had something similar in the World Cup, and they ended up winning. I just see images of Kylian Mbappe wearing it with like a base layer, and the sort of the design on the sleeve sort of merges into the base layer quite nicely. I quite like it. It's an interesting design. It's just a weird thing that two very big clubs, and Spurs is a big club, would have such a kit so similar to another team's like that. The third kit. Now this is the one I'm interested in, the Nike third kits. Now, what does that depict? So they've every Nike third kit, or for the bigger team certainly, have got sort of a graphical sublimated image on it.
Yeah.
What's the Tottenham one about?
It's actually, if you get close enough to look at it, the pattern is like an aerial map of the area of North London, the borough of Haringey, where Tottenham are based. I don't think it's not like you were looking at an A to Z or anything like that, an actual, you know, map like that. But I think it's more of an aerial shot. I've looked at it close up. I've held one. I've looked at it, and I don't see it myself. But then I'm not standing next to a map of Haringey to be able to compare it. I'm sure it is a true likeness, but it doesn't, you know, sing out to me. But you've got to be holding it or standing in front of it to see this. If you're in the stands or even just, you know, 10 yards away from it, you can't particularly make that out. It just looks like a shirt that's, well, I mean, I would call it, I'd look it up on a paint chart and it'd be called Pixie Green or something. And then the top half is a lot darker even than a bottle green. And the sleeves are in that colour too. But essentially it's a two-tone shirt. And from afar, that's what it looks like.
What I mean, what I... I hadn't thought about this before, and I'm asking this question, I'm dropping this question on you, so I apologise, but does that mean it's got the stadium on it, and which version of the stadium has it got? Because if they're thinking ahead, obviously the stadium, they should be playing in the stadium now.
Yes.
So really, that shirt should show the new stadium on there, if it's showing. No,
like I say, I don't think it's that detailed. I don't think it's got the roads. I think it's... if you looked on Google Maps, it would be like the satellite image rather than the map image,
okay,
so to speak. I don't know if that's a good explanation. It's hard to sort of describe it visually, but it's not that clear that you would say, oh yeah, look, there's the high road, or that's where Seven Sisters is, or they've had to stop there because you'll get another club that's just, you know, 3 miles down the road.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Well, that, you know, yeah, maybe, but if you had that in the shadows of the arms, maybe that might be apt, but...
Yeah. But things like that have happened before, haven't they? But, yeah, that would be quite good.
But even the choice of colour for it, I mean, you could have had that with any colouration you wanted, but they've chosen, supposedly, a historic colour, and that shade of green was the colour of the brewery that used to own the land where Whitehall Lane was. So this is in the realms of you know, Manchester United's pink away kit being a tribute to the pink newspaper with the scores on, you know, at the end of the day, or United having a gingham kit because of the textile industry in Manchester. You know, essentially they've chosen a colour and then they've had to try and find some way of of linking it to the club. But this is supposedly that the club was Whitehall Lane ground originally. Was brewery's land that the club bought from them, and the part of the deal was that the brewery kept any takings, you know, from ale sold at the ground. Oh, but you know, this was really at the turn of the 20th century, right, 1900.
Yeah, I don't necessarily mind. I know it's you wonder if it's just entirely bullshit, but I don't. Think I have a too big a problem. They did it with Celtic as well. Celtic released a pink kit and they said it was like the ticket stub from the European Cup final. That's represented. It's like, does it, or did you think it was about time Celtic had a pink kit for you to release?
Yeah, exactly. And they have to find a way, the marketing people have to find a way of attaching it to your club with some spiel. Whereas honestly, the fans would rather you just say it's pink's turn. Or we drew pink out of a hat.
Yeah. But the elephant in the room here is that obviously you've got the blue away and you've got this greeny thing, third kit. What the elephant in the room is the second season without a yellow kit, would that be right?
I don't think it's so much that it's the second season without a yellow kit. I think yellow has become far less popular. For kits, certainly for sales wise. So I think generally it's not expected that we're going to have a yellow kit, certainly anywhere near every year. It's something that gets recycled through the palette, and it's just not as often as it used to be.
Okay, all right. So it's just an indication of the current trends. Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
Fair enough. So how do you, we're second year in now for Nike. How do you evaluate what they've done so far? Because I think we both agreed that the first, certainly the home kit in the first season was pretty wonderful. It was about as good a Tottenham kit as you're going to get, especially playing it reasonably safe, not wanting to annoy people, but getting it like a classic design. It worked really well. Where are we now, all in all?
I mean, I expected to go from a plain shirt to something. And again, it's not bonkers, but it's, you know, it's certainly got a lot of design element to it. There would be lots of people who would say their favourite Tottenham shirts are as plain as you can be. Not even a contrasting cuff or collar would be perfect. And it should just have a cockerel on it. And, you know, in the modern era, you're going to get sponsorship. You're going to get some other clubs have secondary sponsors on the sleeves. Tottenham don't have that because at the moment they think that would detract from any potential stadium sponsor, so that's the reason why they've deliberately not gone down that route. But yeah, I think, you know, next season might be plainer, or it might at least be a different design element. But you just kind of have to expect it, change for change sake, as I might have said earlier.
Okay, And so are Nike doing a good job, would you say?
Year one, yes. Year two, not so. You know, you can only judge them so far. I'd say it's a 50-50 hit rate. Even with the, you know, the kits, the away kit last year was absolutely fantastic, a real classic. But it was plain, and I kind of think a lot of people prefer that.
Yeah.
Because there's more tradition.
Where do they go now? Is that what you think is going to happen? That it's going to be more traditional again next season? There's going to be like a cycle like that?
I don't know. I just wonder if they'll go for a different design element, but tone it back in a bit. The fear would be that they do something, you know, utterly crazy next year, and you know, maybe in a navy sleeves or something that's, you know, far bigger, far bolder. I mean, Watford have gone from never not having stripes for donkey's years. I mean, we're going back, you know, well past the modern era, and this season from nowhere, Watford are in stripes. Well, why might Tottenham not change from that, you know, change to a striped shirt? Oof. History would say, well, they haven't done that, you know, for hundreds of years, or not since chain shirts, you know, in the 50s. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised by anything in this day and age.
Okay, well, that's sort of the new kits covered. In terms of going back to the book again, you touch on the history of Tottenham. You kind of couldn't tell us too much when we spoke last year. You couldn't tell us too much about what was going on in the book. Are there any particular highlights of the book that you can mention?
I mean, there's everything in the book is... It's been so well researched, and I don't mean that from the element of things that I've done. Myths are debunked, you know, situations are explained. So probably the biggest story in Tottenham's kit history was the kit fail in the 1987 Cup final, as we've just mentioned. That's explained in full detail, with key protagonists having been interviewed and giving their side of things. But Shakey's spoken to all the relevant people and, you know, has got to the bottom of everything, and explanations of why changes were made in other cup finals. So in 1971, Tottenham played Aston Villa in the League Cup final. Both clubs had white socks that season, so both clubs were forced to change. But Spurs also wore different shorts on that day. That's explained. There's a different tone on the embroidery of the kit for that. So that's all gone into. It can be as much detail as you want if you want to read every element of the book, or you've just got the pictures there, which are just such an amazing quality of all of these match worn shirts. These aren't replicas, these aren't from the shop. These are shirts that were worn by some by legends of the club, and some where there was only one shirt available to cover a design that, you know, somebody who actually played one game and one game only for Tottenham and missed a penalty in a penalty shootout. But that's the only available match worn shirt. So it had to be in the book.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that it does sound. I mean, I've got. I'm not an Arsenal fan either, and I've got the Arsenal shirt book. So
This will
be one that I'll be adding to my collection. And
that's the vibe I'm getting from lots of people out there in the sort of Twitterverse, you know, that follow and the regular people that we chat to, or the people we know who respond on certain Facebook groups. That, you know, people are looking forward to this book, and it's well worth it. I mean, I've seen an advanced copy, and it's mightily impressive. It's everything I hoped it would be and more.
Good. I'm glad it's turned out that way. It's taken a little bit longer than we expected, but it's here now. So
it's worth the wait, and it's better for the wait actually, because a couple of gaps that we didn't have, a few shirts have subsequently been filled. It's come even further up to date than it was. It's a better product for the delay. So it's better for that.
Okay, and obviously you have a friendship and a working relationship with Shakey as well. You interviewed him for your podcast, is that right?
That's right, yes. I'm on a weekly Tottenham podcast called The Echoes of Glory, and Shakey was very interesting conversation I had with him, and that was out about a week or so ago. But we'll put a link in the spiel for this, if that's okay, to share that with people who want to go back and listen to that if they've not already heard it.
Yeah. Just for people who are not using the or not watching this, where it's actually got the notes, because I'll pop the notes, as you say, on here. What is the what's the episode number?
It's just so they can season find it. 8, episode 13. And again, it's Echoes of Glory.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. Okay. So that nicely ties this up. It's been a long time coming, this podcast. I apologise to everyone who has been waiting for this podcast, Spurs fans or Kit fans who just designfootball.com podcast completists who haven't had episode 27. Episode 27 is here now. I hope this has been worth the wait as well. Thanks so much, Andrew, for talking to me last year.
It's been my pleasure.
For coming back to talk to me now, just to get this done and get this out there. How can people get hold of you? Are you on sort of social media and things?
Yes, I'm on Twitter and I'm at Stato_74.
Okay, we might have mentioned that before, but if not, then there you go. And Echoes of Glory are also on Twitter and things
yes,
like that.
Yes, that's @ Echoes of Glory, all one word. But there'll be a link on my Twitter page if you want to go from there.
Okay, well, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Andrew. We will be having more podcasts coming soon. And hopefully we'll get a chat with Shaky ourselves, so hopefully we can get Shaky on this podcast before too long, and then have a chat with the man himself. Thank you again, Andrew. For the second time in this episode, the music is kicking in, so I'll just say goodbye and check out the website. We're designfootball.com on Facebook, Design Football on Twitter, and speak to you again soon. Bye now. Okay. Yep. Splendid. Thanks so much for that. And now I need to edit it. So shall I stop that? There's nothing we've forgotten, isn't there? Is there anything obvious that we should have talked about? Okay. Brilliant. So I'll chuck that into an edit. I'll stop my recording there.